So on Sunday mornings, we're reading through Matthew's Gospel. We're in chapter 6. We're thinking about a block of teaching that Jesus gave to his disciples on one occasion. Jesus had gone up on a mountain. He'd sat down. His disciples had followed him up the mountain. They gathered around him, and Jesus taught his disciples. And we've got a summary of what Jesus taught them on that occasion in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And we call it the Sermon on the Mount. And that's what we've been looking at in these last few months. Now remember, we say it each week, Jesus is talking here to his disciples. He's not talking to people in general. He's talking to people who believe in him. They believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the King. He's God's representative on earth. They know that God has sent him. They know that he's building the kingdom of heaven, God's kingdom, here on earth. And they know that he and he alone decides who can enter that kingdom. They know that Jesus has got total authority. He's got all God's power in his hands. They know that Jesus alone can save people from the power of evil. And these are people who have come to Jesus. And they've surrendered to Jesus. They're trusting him alone to rescue them from the powers of evil. They're trusting him to save them from their sins. They want to be members of his kingdom. And they are, because Jesus has brought them into his kingdom. Now they've got a share in his kingdom. More than that, they've become children of God. And Jesus, the eternal Son of God, has shared his position with them. He's brought them into the family so that now they can call God their Father in a way that no one else can. That's the background to the Sermon on the Mount and to the section that we're returning to this morning. We read again this morning. We've read it lots of times before, but we read it again. The section from chapter 6, verse 19, through to the end of the chapter. In this section, Jesus is talking to his disciples about money and possessions. What does Jesus have to say to his disciples, the people who belong to him, the people who have God as their Father? What does he have to say to them about money and possessions? Well, the first thing he has to say to them is this, that they mustn't accumulate, hoard up wealth and possessions that they don't need and that they're not going to use. That's what he means when he says in verse 19, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. There are so many people, not everybody by any means, but there are lots and lots of people who are desperate to be wealthy. What that means is they want to have lots of money piling up in their bank accounts and investments and real estate. Because it gives them power. Or at least it makes them feel powerful. Then there are lots and lots of people who are obsessed with having possessions. Houses, cars, designer clothes, antiques, jewellery, a collection of clocks, or Banner of Truth books, or Pokemon cards. And most of the things they collect are things that they don't need at all, and that they're never going to use. But having those things makes them feel secure, or important, or sophisticated, or successful. Well, it's those things Jesus is talking about when he talks about laying up treasures on earth. And he simply says to his disciples, don't do it. Don't gather wealth. Don't gather possessions which you're not going to use for good, wise, God-honoring purposes. Stuff that you're just going to have for the sake of having it. Rather, says Jesus, lay up treasures in heaven. Here on earth, live in such a way that it will bring you everlasting rewards in the world to come. Keep heaven, keep eternity in your mind all the time, and make it your great priority to use your time, your energy, your resources, your opportunities to get things that will bring you joy in the world to come. And we talked about what sort of things Jesus means. What it means to have treasures in heaven. And how we go about laying up treasures in heaven. Now, so far all I've done this morning is repeat things. That's come, I know, as a great shock to you that I should repeat anything, but that's all I've done. I've repeated things that we've said lots of times in the last few weeks. And there is a danger in doing that. Some of you, I'm quite sure some of you will be saying to yourselves, come on, we've heard all this already. Come on, just get a move on. Well, I will get a move on. We're going to cover at least one more verse this morning, God willing. But let me say this first. Jesus is telling us that this is something we have to do very deliberately, with real determination, with a sense of purpose. I mean, people who lay up treasures on earth, many of them do it very deliberately, don't they? They're constantly thinking about how they're going to save and invest. They're tracking the stock market. They're checking their pension statement every day. They're looking at catalogues. They're thinking all the time about how they're going to build up their treasures on earth. Well, Jesus is saying to his disciples, you've got to be just as deliberate, just as determined about building up treasures in heaven. You've actually got to be thinking about things in that way. What can I do this week? What can I do today that will bring me treasures in heaven? What opportunities have I got now to increase my stock in heavenly property? Do you ever think like that? Jesus is telling you that you must. If you're one of his disciples, he's saying you must think about the question of how you are going to lay up treasure in heaven, and then you've got to do it. I mean, since last Sunday, when we last read these words of the Lord Jesus, how much have your heavenly treasures increased in the past week? What have you done in the past week that will bring you heavenly rewards? Are you keeping track? What have you done about which you'll be able to say on the day of judgment, when all the totting up happens, "Oh, I'm so glad I did that. I can't say I enjoy doing it at the time, but now I'm reaping the reward." What's been added to your portfolio of heavenly treasures? I suppose what I'm asking is this. We've read these words that the Lord Jesus spoke to his disciples. How many times have we read them now? And we've talked about them in detail lots of times. So have you put them into practice? Have they actually made a difference in terms of the choices you've been making day by day? And are you going to put them into practice in the week ahead? What are you going to do about laying up treasures in heaven? So that's the command we've been looking at. Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Instead, lay up treasures for yourself in heaven. And then we looked at the reasons Jesus gave for that command. There was the practical reason that Jesus gives in verses 19 and 20. The fact that any treasures you do lay up on earth are insecure. They're perishable. They're passing. They're not just a risky investment. You're guaranteed to lose them all in the end. There's zero return. Whereas the treasures you lay up in heaven are guaranteed to last forever. Don't need to make that point again. But in verses 21 to 23, Jesus, you remember, gives us an even more important reason why we must not build up treasures on earth, why we mustn't accumulate unused wealth, possessions we don't need. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He's saying, if your treasures are here on earth, then you'll always be thinking about earthly things, gloating over them, worrying about them, fussing over them, making them your priority. Whereas if your treasures are in heaven, your mind, your heart will gravitate there. You'll always be thinking about heaven and heavenly things. He's saying your heart follows your choices. You choose to have lots of property and possessions here on earth, and they'll dominate your thoughts and your feelings. You choose to gain rewards in heaven, and heaven will become more and more important to you. You know, I found it really interesting in the last couple of weeks looking at or listening to some of the sermons that different preachers have preached on this passage. And there are lots of them obviously available on the web. So many of them say something like this: it's fine to be wealthy. It's fine to have lots of property. It's fine to have treasures on earth, providing that you don't let it distract you from heavenly things, from the most important things, from heavenly treasures. I looked to see what one very well-known American preacher who died recently had said about this passage. When this man died, he left behind him three luxury homes, mansions by most people's standards, worth minimum estimate $4 million, other estimates $14 million. How did he deal with this passage? Well, just the way I just said. He said, having treasures on earth isn't a problem, providing that you don't let it interfere with your real priority, gaining treasures on in heaven. But Jesus' point is this. If you have treasures on earth, it will interfere with your real priority, gaining treasures in heaven. One will crowd out the other. You've only got one heart. And if your heart is occupied with earthly treasures, it won't have room for heavenly treasures. You've only got so much emotional capacity. If you're excited, passionate, emotionally invested in earthly things, you won't have any emotion left over for heavenly things. That's what Jesus is getting at in the little parable he gives us in verses 22 and 23 about the eye and the body. I'm not going to go through it again word by word because we did that last week. But basically he says the eye guides the whole body, the whole self. If your eye is on earthly treasures, then that is going to affect everything. It'll affect all your choices, where you go, what you do, what you choose from day to day. But equally, if your eye is on heavenly treasures, then equally that will shape your choices here. Jesus is saying you've got to keep your eye fixed on heaven and what heaven has to offer. And you simply can't do it if your eye is constantly being drawn away. If it's been drawn away by that website which advertises all the latest unnecessary novel luxuries, or the TV shopping channel where you'll see 1,000 items which you never knew you needed but which now you've got to have now that you've seen them. You know, there's at least one lady here who knows exactly what I'm talking about because she's wept over a relative of hers who became addicted to those shopping channels. And every day he would be watching agog at everything that was on offer. He'd be buying more and more stuff just to pile up in his home. He'd be running up more and more debts. And in the end, there was no room left for any desire for heavenly things. There was no pursuing of heavenly joys because his eyes, his heart, his body were set on earthly things. Jesus' words are shocking, aren't they? When you really take them in. He doesn't say that having your treasures on earth, having your hoarded wealth, having your unneeded, unused possessions, he doesn't say that having your luxury status symbol goods may damage your spiritual life, may distract you from what should be your real priorities. He says it will. Inevitably. Many of us if we were to look back and then look at the present, we would say that financially we're actually better off now than we ever have been. Might not feel like it, but objectively it's true. Certainly in terms of the possessions we own, the goods we've acquired. You know, those of you who are my generation, most of us grew up with very little relative to what people have nowadays, relative to what we have nowadays. I mean, when I was a child, well, it was fairly normal for a family to have a car, but lots didn't. Most homes didn't have a washing machine or a TV set. Very few of us had a phone, and by that I mean a landline. I'm not talking about mobiles. I can remember when we had our first phone installed. None of us had hi-fi or a computer or electronic toys or central heating. And certainly we as a family had zero money to spend on luxury items acquired just because they were fashionable, but which weren't going to be used. Compared with those days, most of us have so much, don't we? We have so many possessions, and so many of them are unused. You know, almost every house that's been built in the last 30 years has a garage. And almost none of them are used for a car. They're used to pile up all the possessions that we bought because they were fashionable. Or because they seemed too good to miss. Or because we just felt we had to have them. Garages are storage space for unused goods. In the average UK home, we have so much. Now, has it helped us to walk with God? Has it helped us to be more single-minded in seeking Him, in serving Him, in loving Him? You might think that now that we're secure in a way we never were back then, now that we've got everything we need to have a comfortable life, you would think that would free us up to pursue heavenly concerns. But is it like that? Isn't it true that we spend so much time updating our possessions, storing our possessions, maintaining our possessions, insuring our possessions, fussing over them, that it actually leaves us very little time or energy or motivation for seeking heavenly treasures? I think that for many of us at least, we would have to admit that having earthly treasures has only distracted us from what should be our real priorities. But that's how Jesus said it would be. Jesus made it so clear that laying up treasure on earth, acquiring wealth and possessions that we don't need, will distract us from God Himself and the eternal treasures that God can give. Jesus put it so starkly in verse 24, no one can serve two masters. Which two masters is he thinking about? Last line of the verse, you cannot serve God and money. Doesn't say you shouldn't. He says you can't. It's impossible. And some of you know from experience how hard it is to have two part-time jobs. And to try to balance the claims of one against the claims of the other. You know, both employers ask you to come in on the same Saturday. And, well, you actually quite enjoy the work you do for employer A, but employer B pays better. And actually the job he's asking you to do on the Saturday is more urgent. It's like that, isn't it? Again and again, there's a conflict of interests. And in the end, many people who tried to hold down two jobs like that say, well, it just wasn't working. They're forced to give up one or the other because the priorities are clashing all the time. Of course, in Jesus' world, it was much harder because most people who were working worked as slaves, which is what's implied here by the word master and the word serve in verse 24. Imagine a slave who's trying to keep two masters happy. He's working on a big estate. But it's never been clear who his real master is. Is it the privileged son of the estate owner? Or is it the foreman who's in charge of operations? Both are giving him orders. And both are expecting him to run round obeying them. And he finds it just impossible. As Jesus says in the middle of this verse. He finishes up hating one of them and loving the other. Perhaps he really resents the son and admires the foreman. Or it might be the other way around. He may be devoted to the son and despise the foreman. One way or another, their claims conflict. And the day will come when he gets a direct order from one and a contradictory order from the other, and he's got to choose whom he's going to obey. And he'll go with the one he loves, the one he's devoted to. And the other one will be squeezed out. Well, Jesus says it's like that with wealth, with stored up possessions, with the treasures he's been talking about. If you have them, they will be wanting to claim you. You call them your possessions, but they will want to possess you. They'll be demanding your time and your energy. They want to be your master. But if you're one of Jesus' disciples, you already have a master. You've entered God's kingdom. You're his subject, and he demands total submission, total obedience. All your time, all your energy, all your resources to be used for him in the way that will bring him most honour and glory and pleasure. That's the only way you can win the treasures in heaven that he's got to give. So two masters competing. Well, Jesus says you'll finish up loving the one and hating the other. You'll finish up despising one and being devoted to the other. It's inevitable. You'll finish up resenting God's demands on you because they block you from getting the earthly things you want and enjoying them. Or you'll finish up getting frustrated with the time and energy you're putting into your earthly treasures because they're distracting you from pursuing and enjoying God. You'll finish up saying, oh, all this stuff I've collected over the years, it's just distracting me now from the things I really want to do. Getting to know God better, serving him. Or you'll say the opposite. You'll say, oh, I guess when I was a young Christian, I was pretty fanatical. I mean, I spent all my time going on about God and heaven, but now, well, I've realized that you can't spend all your time on those things. You've got to look after your interests here in this world. It'll be one or the other. In this conflict between the two masters, one, your love for the one will push out your love for the other. Your devotion to the one will stop you from serving the other. In the end, you can't serve God and money, God and possessions. John Wesley said this, quote, "If riches increase, you are in imminent danger of loving them." If riches increase, you are in imminent danger of loving them. Well, he was right. But Jesus put it even more strongly, didn't he? He said, if riches increase, in the sense of money and possessions which you don't need and aren't using for God's service, if you're just hanging on to wealth, it's not just that you're in danger of loving those riches, it's that you will certainly finish up loving them. And they will crowd out your love for God. John Wesley himself made sure that he didn't build up wealth and unnecessary possessions. Apparently, when he began his work as a young preacher, his income was £30 a year. And his living expenses amounted to £28. So that left him £2 to give away to the poor. The following year, his income had doubled to £60. So how much now did he live on? And how much did he give away? Well, he lived on £28. And now he gave away £32. By the third year, his income had risen to £90 a year. And he lived on £28 and gave away £62. In the fourth year, he had an income of £120. How much did he spend on himself? £28. And he gave £92 away. And that pattern continued throughout his whole life. His annual income eventually arrived at £1,400 because people were buying so many of his books, and he was still living on £28 a year, and he was giving away everything else. Over the course of his lifetime, he gave away over £30,000. He wrote this in his journal: I left no money to anyone in my will because I had none. But now, seeing I have acquired much by the sale of my books, I have given it all to the poor that I might not leave any behind me. And if, when I die, I leave more than £10 behind me, I give anyone leave to call me a thief and a robber. He gives away £30,000 over his lifetime, and he dies with less than £10 in his account. Now, I'm not telling you that we can all operate on that basis, but I'm showing you how utterly serious John Wesley was about what Jesus says here. He really felt how dangerous it was to have treasures on earth. So he made sure he didn't have any treasures. He had what he needed. And we'll be talking about that next week, God willing. That there are things which we need and which it would be irresponsible not to have. John Wesley had his white horse on which he crisscrossed the country, and he had respectable clothes, and he had books that he needed for his studying, and he had a 1 gallon teapot donated him by Josiah Wedgwood because he had so many people gathering around his meal table every day when he was at home. Later in life, he had a carriage when he could no longer ride hundreds of miles on horseback. Then he travelled by carriage. He had possessions, necessary possessions, possessions that he was using for God's service. But he left nothing behind him that he had acquired just to be stored away in the garage or the stable. Think again about the words that Jesus uses here in verse 24. He says, "No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other." Now those are really strong words, aren't they? Love, hate, be devoted to, despise. And it's true. We really know so many people who obviously love money and possessions. And they really are devoted to them. We know people who are willing to do anything to get a bit more money, even though they've already got plenty. We know people who spend all their time dreaming about winning the lottery and who become addicted to gambling. We know so many people, money is their master. They love it. And they love the things that money can buy for them. And they treasure those things. They are devoted to them. Well, Jesus is saying that what he wants to see in his disciples is that. Except that it's not money he wants to see them loving and being devoted to. He wants to see them loving God their Father with that sort of passion, with that sort of single-mindedness. He wants to see his disciples utterly devoted to God, thinking about him night and day, finding all their joy, all their delight, all their motivation in him. Can't whittle down these words, can we? Love, hate, be devoted to, despise. We had our conference, the God's Glory, Our Joy conference, a few weeks back, didn't we? Wonder if you'd gone round each of the people at that conference and asked, "Are you a Christian?" Almost everyone there would have said yes. If you'd asked, "Are you a disciple of Jesus?" Might have squirmed a bit, but I think they'd all have said yes. If you'd said, "Do you love God passionately, devotedly, single-mindedly, Is he your one supreme priority? Is he more important to you than anything in this world? How many of us would have said an unhesitating yes? And yet Jesus is telling us that that's what every one of his disciples should be able to say. What's hindering us from loving God in that way? Occasionally we meet a Christian who does, and it's evident. What's hindering us from having that sort of single-minded love for God? Well, there may be many things. But for some of us, the clue is here in these verses. For some of us, it may be that we will never love God in that way because our love is given to the treasures of earth. It may be that we're never going to love God with all our heart until we settle it in our mind that our treasure is going to be in heaven and not here on earth. No man can serve two masters. Either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. In the society in which we live, this materialistic society that's shouting its slogans into our ears all the time, it's so hard to shut out the voices that call us away from our God and tell us that we need the possessions of this world. But somehow we've got to shut out those voices, and we've got to love our God with all our hearts and souls and mind and strength.